Today on The Grave Talks, The Ghosts of Galveston with January Wilson and Eddie Spector. Galveston, Texas is often considered one of the most haunted places in America due to its history of tragedy and devastation. The Great Storm of 1900, the deadliest natural disaster in U.S. history, claimed up to 12,000 lives, leaving a lasting imprint on the island. Many believe the spirits of the hurricane's victims still linger. Many of Galveston's historic structures have withstood wars, natural disasters, and countless tragic events, contributing to their haunted reputations. The island's role in the Civil War, including the Battle of Galveston, adds yet another layer to its haunted history. The city has also experienced epidemics that have caused numerous deaths, also contributing to Galveston's haunted status. These historical events and tragedies have created a collection of ghost stories and paranormal experiences that continue to intrigue residents and visitors alike. Today on The Grave Talks, The Ghosts of Galveston, with Eddie Spector and January Wilson of Eddie Spector's Ghost Tours of Galveston Island. Thank you very much for joining me today. I'm really, really excited to talk about Galveston.
Thank you so much for having me, Carol. I appreciate you.
This is going to be fun. In January, now, do you work with Eddie on the ghost tours?
I do. He's been doing it for a very long time. I was lucky enough. He invited me in about 3 years ago, and I love it.
You are also an attorney.
I am.
See, I talked to a paranormal group. I think they were out of Florida, and they had an attorney in their group. And I thought that makes so much sense because of the way you would approach things.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. She keeps us out of trouble.
Which is always a good thing. Now, I'll start with you, Eddie. What got you interested in the paranormal?
Well, actually, it was my mom. My mom was the spiritual side of the family, and my dad was the military side. So he was more disciplined, and my mom was more open to things. And so I'm kind of like a Mulder and Scully in one when it comes to this stuff. And it all began when I was a kid, you know, and every house that we would be in, if it was haunted, my mom would just very calmly say, so-and-so hung himself on the stairs, and I saw him the other day in the kitchen, but there's no threat. It's just benevolence. And I'm like, oh, okay, thanks, Mom. I just wanted some popcorn.
That's a little frightening as a kid. But I guess when your mom's delivering it in a calm way, you're like, I shouldn't be scared, but I'm a little freaked out.
Well, she made it very normal, and she helped me through it. I would have psychic thoughts or things like that, and she would just always be really cool and calm about it. And ever since then, I would do my research, and if places were haunted, that was my number one go-to. I was born in Webster. And Galveston was the real place to go for hauntings. And back when it was dial-up internet, I would get online and find all these haunted places. And I took my disposable camera and went down there and took photos and just had a really good time.
In January, how did you get interested in the paranormal?
Well, I have a similar story to Eddie in the sense that it happened in childhood. Not so similar in the sense that everyone was not as supportive as his mother, but to my mom's credit, she's been great. But I remember seeing apparitions or ghosts when I was very young. A lady used to sit in the chair that my grandpa sat in for breakfast, and I would cry at the table. I was like 4 or 5, and I'd say, stop sitting on that lady. And I had imaginary friends outside, and I had named them. And, you know, they told me, this isn't real, January. You've got to get it together. I just kind of forgot about it, I guess. And for whatever reason, at 18, my mom handed me a deck of tarot cards. She said, I got these for you. I don't know why. Just here you go. And so I thought, okay, cool. So I'm reading for my friends, and I am going to law school eventually. And I also just kind of forgot about it, blocked it out. It was a parlor trick I had up my sleeve. And at some point, the as it happens, the spirits just started coming back through. And it was undeniable. And I find myself, it's funny you mentioned the Walmart we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, because I mentioned there's a haunted Walmart in Galveston, supposedly anyway.
Yeah, I found myself Googling that and reading about all that. And I just got back into the interest of it, or I became interested again. And recently, Eddie and I were acting partners. We were actually cast in a movie together. And he's leaning on a cabinet one day as an acting class. And he just looks at me, he goes, "I need a ghost tour guide. Would you want to do ghost tours by chance?" I'm like, the guy who has the hearse, the cool guy in Galveston with the hearse, just asked me if I want to do ghost tours. Resounding yes.
I did want to mention that when I went to Disney Elementary School, my mom gave me a Ouija board to bring for a show and tell. That's how...
She did not. Did she really?
Absolutely.
And so did you take the Ouija board for show and tell? And did the other kids seem kind of open to it? Or did the teacher, was the teacher like,
From what I remember, it was pretty brilliant. And years later, you know, when Facebook showed up, I was like, oh, I wonder if I could find my old friends from elementary school. I remember an old girlfriend, my first kind of girlfriend. Her name was Jennifer Johnson. I was like, oh, I'm going to look her up. And I found her and I said, did you go to Disney Elementary? She goes, yeah. Are you the guy who brought the Ouija board in? I said, yes. Oh, hey, how you doing?
Oh, that's so funny because I just have this vision of all of these kids around the dinner table that night saying, Eddie brought a Ouija board to show and tell today.
Right?
Oh, my God, that makes me laugh. You know, years ago, I don't know, it was probably 10, 12 years ago, I took several cruises out of Galveston. And one time we did a bus tour of Galveston, and it was just kind of Galveston history. I found it to be one of the most amazing cities that, like, the first couple times I'd went, we didn't do the bus tour. But then once I took that bus tour, I got this whole different appreciation for Galveston and immediately knew this is a very haunted city. It just has this feeling about it. I didn't even realize about the hurricane at that time and some of this dark history that Galveston has. It was just the architecture, these incredible, magnificent mansions, like things I haven't seen anywhere else. So I kind of want to start with the history of Galveston. So Eddie, you guys want to kind of start and talk a little about the history?
First of all, you know, Galveston became a city in 1839, and it was huge. It became very, very huge. It was like the Ellis Island of the place. It was all these immigrants would come over to Galveston and created one of the greatest cities in the world. It flourished. It was very wonderful. It was way more popular than Houston because Houston didn't exist. Galveston was also the capital of Texas at one time. Going through all that, Galveston had many, many firsts before any other city in Texas. Galveston had the first electric lights, the first post office, the first school for nurses, you name it. Galveston had it first. It was a huge, flourishing city. And when you get immigrants, you get, they also bring a lot of diseases to Galveston. And so Galveston started to see its share of death slowly. It became very, very popular, of course, but also very haunted with mysterious incidents.
And it was like 1900 when there was a devastating hurricane. Was it? I think it was right around 1900.
It was.
Exactly. Yeah, even before that, Carol, through these diseases, we had tuberculosis, we had yellow fever, cholera, you name it. It was pretty horrific. Many, many people died. through that. And even before that, the Karankawa Native Americans were there doing their thing. And then they had Jean Lafitte, the pirate, show up there. Lots of things. And then, of course, the Civil War in 1863.
Oh, right.
Lots of death.
You don't think lots about the death. Civil War in Galveston.
You don't. And we just celebrated Juneteenth because Galveston was the last holdout of slavery.
Yeah, what's really interesting about that, I mean, it happened, gosh, it was, what, 1865 announced that all slaves were free, but it took 2.5 years for Galveston to hear the news right there, and that's what marked Juneteenth. It was pretty amazing.
But you can imagine a lot of really bad things happened here. We still have the area where slave market, you know, where they auctioned human beings off. And it's definitely part of our ghost store.
And I don't think a lot of us realize how Galveston was connected with that. Because you think about the South, as in Georgia and Tennessee and that area, you don't think about Galveston. But, you know, with it being on the water, it does make sense.
Well, I think it's pretty wonderful. Stephen Colbert actually talked about it on his show. He said he actually mentioned Galveston when he said Juneteenth. I said, yes, please do, because a lot of people don't know. It was pretty important here.
Yeah, it was the main port. We had the business port. So if you were bringing in commodities, be it, you know, cotton, we had a lot of that coming through here too, along with humans.
And you know, I think too, when it comes to hauntings, of course, we all think about just the death side of it. But when you think about all the trauma that happened and, you know, what these people went through, there's a lot. And so I could see how that could create a really dark, deep, heavy energy.
Absolutely. The night of the 1900 storm alone, 10 to 12,000 people died that night. That'll leave a mark.
Speaking about that storm, we were getting a lot of our weather information from Cuba. And this is a very important point I want to make. And at this time, we're getting the weather information from Cuba, and it was pretty good. But some government official decided we're not going to listen to them anymore. We're going to do our own thing. And so instead of listening to them, hearing that a storm is headed their way, they thought, oh, we're fine. The storm's headed towards the Florida Peninsula. We'll be just fine. Oh, okay. Well, the morning of September 8th, they woke to horrible clouds and just rainy weather, and the waters were coming in with a northern wind, which was very strange. Anytime we get northern winds, the waters are sucked out of here, kind of thing. But this wasn't the case, and people were just like, no, they said we were going to be fine. So kids were playing, all this stuff. Well, by noon, the water started coming in, and they started to get a little worried. No, we'll be all right.
Yeah, and keep in mind what they're wearing. Full Edwardian suits, long dresses, petticoats.
By 3 o'clock, people started to panic, and they started to try to take the train over across to the inland. And by that time, it was like 2 feet of water above the tracks, and they were freaking out, and the train would just be destroyed right there. And so people were stuck. The causeway was not there. They couldn't get off the island. They were stuck there. And by 6 o'clock, Galveston was almost the sea bottom, you know. And by 8 o'clock, boom, here it comes. Go to higher ground. Do what you can. And all through the night, these people trying to survive heard cries and screams of others trying to make it through this. And then the next day, they awoke to major devastation. Over, like she said, over 12,000 people perished. And at that time, there were about 37,000 people on the island. So it's almost a third of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the island, a third of Galveston was completely destroyed. The other third, 90% destroyed. And the other half, it didn't matter. It was inhabitable. Nobody lived there in the first place. And so you have all these people dead on the island. Now, what do you do with these people? Well, first of all, the officials had to go around with carriages filled with rifles and whiskey. And they went to a survivor and said, here's your whiskey. We need your help to gather all these bodies. Will you help? If you said no, they would turn you around, shoot you in the back, go to the next person. We don't have time for this. Here's your whiskey. Will you help? Yes. Yes, I will help.
Well, and probably a lot of the decisions that he's about to describe were made because there was no water, but a lot of whiskey.
That makes sense, because there wouldn't be. If you look at the photos from the devastation that happened, there was the infrastructure of the city.
Leveled, yeah. Debris everywhere, bodies, debris, animal bodies too, horses, dogs, cats. It was traumatic.
And what they decided to do, I'm going to give you a little bit. This is part of our tour, but what they decided to do was take these bodies and put them on barges and send them out about 20 miles out to sea, weigh their feet, and put them in the water. Well, 3 days later, all these bodies started washing up on the beaches.
Oh, my God.
Thousands of bodies on our beaches. Now what do you do with them? Well, they decided, well, we're going to have to burn them. Well, you can't burn them now. They're waterlogged. So they went down the Strand to all these huge buildings that you go into today to get some ice cream and stuff. And they put these bodies in there and made makeshift morgues. And then they would prepare them for funeral fires. Piles of bodies all around the island, just burning and burning and burning. Everywhere on the island. You know, we do have a very huge cemetery on 43rd and Broadway that has seven cemeteries in one, which is wonderful. But what people don't know is that the entire island is a cemetery, because after this 15-foot storm surge swept over the island, they decided to raise the island after the fact. And so when they did, they built the seawall about 17 feet high, and they just covered all those burned dead bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And no markings anywhere. So when you're walking down the Strand, you're walking on top of people.
As gruesome as that is, at that point, what other choices did they have?
They didn't. You're right.
There has to be a decision made rather quickly.
People sick. The bodies were starting to rot and get people sick.
Right. We didn't have refrigeration. You couldn't just have semis. You couldn't have, even if you would have had semis at that time, they couldn't have come in because of the devastation.
Yeah. Yeah. And Gatlinburg was set to be the next Manhattan. Like, this was a bustling port, but this storm took the port out.
It was the Wall Street of the Southwest, man.
It's surprising to me that they were able to rebuild it. And people were willing to live there. Some people, of course, you have no choice because that's where you are. You don't have any money. Now what do? You don't have anything. Where do you go? How do you get there?
That is the immaculate thing that I can't see happening nowadays, because after the great storm, a lot of the businesses said, we can't stay here. And so they went up north and made a small town called Houston. You may have heard of it.
No, I've never heard of that town before, Eddie.
But the people who stayed decided, no, we need to continue on. So what they did, they raised over 2,500 buildings on the island, lifted them up, jacked them up using horses and tricks of the trade, and then filling the bottom with sand. And that's how they kept the place going. It was an amazing feat. I'm so proud of them.
Mm-hmm. And first, when you said raised, I thought you meant R-A-Z, like they leveled them, but they literally raised them up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some of these historic mansions, they were there prior to the hurricane?
Yes.
Absolutely. They built things to last back then, Carol.
They sure did. I've traveled. I've been to lots of places. And some of these mansions in Galveston, I've never seen anything like them. Like the Bishop's Palace.
Amazing.
How did they even build that back then?
With the heavy world.
Yeah, because if they were building a house like that in my neighborhood right now, I think I would be awestruck. It would, well, in my neighborhood, that would be like, what are they doing?
Well, were a whole lot of money. There were some people who were very wealthy on this island and fortunately cared a lot about it.
When the hurricane hit, was this kind of to a lot of the people who perished in the storm didn't have a place to go? You know, they weren't able to go up to a third floor in a very solid structure. So did a lot of the people of wealth withstand the storm?
Well, actually, speaking of that, there's a building called the W.L. Moody Building, and Moody was a pretty prominent person in Galveston. And it was a four-story building, and people during the storm decided to go to the very top floor. They didn't know how high it was going to get, the water. And unfortunately for them, in that one incident, the hurricane destroyed the fourth floor, killing everybody up top.
Oh.
So they didn't even have a chance. It was the lucky ones.
Yeah, and it was everybody was even that next morning. There were no rich or poor. It was all hands on deck.
So because of all of this history, I just don't find it surprising at all that Galveston would be so haunted.
I want to mention a story about the Bishop's Palace. It's said that you can see the ghost of a man wandering across the balcony. His name, they say, is Walter Gresham, pacing the balcony before big storms. He was the original owner of the home.
That would make sense. That residual haunting that, you know, it's going to storm and he's concerned.
Yeah.
Now, Eddie, when did you start doing the ghost tours there in Galveston?
Well, like personally, you know, I've always loved going to Galveston and doing my own research, but there was this ad I saw online for, they were looking for tour guides, and the guy hiring, his name is Dash Beardsley, and I saw him, and we got on the phone, and we talked for 4 hours. And we immediately became friends, and I told him how I would love to work with him on doing tours. And so I started to become a tour guide for him for a little while. And we did a lot of things together. We did a paranormal convention. We've done ghost hunts and things like that. And after he retired, I started doing it myself. So about 16 years now.
They played in a band together?
Yeah. Yeah, we did lots
cool.
of things together.
And with the ghost tours, so you have to do quite a bit of research into the history of Galveston. And you almost would need to narrow down where you go in Galveston. Because a ghost tour there could go on for days. Really?
For a year. And shorter attention spans than ever before. But you'd be surprised, about an hour and a half. Most people can go for about an hour and a half. And that's a good 10 stories.
Now, do you do it differently as far as, is it kind of different tours, different days?
It depends on the group, I think. What do you think, Eddie?
No, absolutely. And it would last for a long time because before each tour, I'll talk to people in their business and I'll walk in, hey, Eddie, you got anything new for me? Oh, yeah, we got this video footage. Here's some pictures, audio footage. And so the stories evolve quite a bit. But what I don't really just, I have to look at them and make sure they're not just trying to bring business. You know, I want to make sure it's true. And so I do my own research. January does as well. Sometimes I'll go to the Rosenberg Library, which was the first library in Texas. Has all the archives, and I'll slip through the newspaper files, and I'll find the actual name of the person who passed away, and I'll figure it out by that. I got to make sure we don't pay people to scare you. You know, this is all genuine stuff. It has to be true.
And speaking of, going through the archives like that, was a lot of that lost in the hurricane, or did it survive?
Oh God, yes,
definitely.
Yeah.
A lot of it did. And that's not the only was lost.
Have storms, so other things have been lost throughout the years.
But what's fortunate about it is that people who actually survived it wrote their accounts down in books. There's many, many books. Like I have a couple of books, Weekend in September, Isaac Storm, things like that, that are great for research because mm-hmm. it's actual accounts.
And, you know, when I do an interview, I spend some time researching and on the place. Maybe there's a couple places we're talking about. I got to be honest, you guys, with talking about Galveston, I wasn't even sure. There's so many places. So I thought I'm going to kind of follow you guys' leads on sharing a few locations, a few stories with us today, and some of them that you find most interesting.
Well, sure. Let's start off with your Walmart story, you know, and the story behind that is that during the Great Storm, there was an orphanage, and the nuns decided to tie themselves to like a handful of children, maybe 10 children each, you know, so if they get lost, they won't get lost during the Great Storm.
Which but seems like a good idea, and it also seems like a horrible idea.
Yeah, if one goes, the entire thing mm-hmm. goes.
It's the only idea, right? What else are you going to do?
Right, exactly.
But today, even today, people will say, people who work there say that they'll have everything cleaned up at night, and then when they come back the next day, there are toys in the toy section on the floor as if they've been played with. All these children are still around there.
And yeah. even employees to work that didn't bother them, their cash registers would not work. Like Walmart was losing money after midnight, so they just shut it down. Prior to COVID, it was the only Walmart in the world. When I said I found myself Googling this stuff, it was the only Walmart in the world that closed at midnight. Has to close at midnight, you know it's haunted.
That's the thing. And the reason for that is that spirits, and they're just people, by the way, for them to talk to us, they try to gain energy by taking energy from electronics, us, mm-hmm. so they could gain potential so they could talk to us.
And, you know, so often people will say, especially on our other show, Real Ghost Stories, that, well, it's a new house. You know, of course, there's, nothing could have happened here. And I'm like, but the land that, and this is the perfect example of that.
Oh, have yeah. you ever seen Poltergeist?
Right. It's like, just because it's a new house, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, oh yeah, you name it.
And especially at Walmart. You would never walk into Walmart and go, this feels haunted. Except you might if you go in Galveston.
Yeah, come visit you. It does feel haunted.
But you know, when you think about that whole city, there's no place you could build, really, that doesn't have some sort of tragedy that occurred there.
100%.
And if you're a little sensitive, you could feel it just going over the causeway. It's like a blanket. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just like, ooh, okay, here it comes.
Before a ghost tour, I'll often text Eddie. As soon as I hit the road, the Broadway is the main road, I get off the causeway, I'll get some kind of sign. A song will come on the radio. It'll be something he and I were just talking about, or a license plate with numbers we were just talking about. It happens almost every time I'm on the way to a tour.
What's beautiful about that is that we tell these people stories. I mean, say you passed away and somebody told your story every night. And isn't that glorious? I mean, they would be like, oh, man, this is great. And so they look out for us. I do think they protect us when we do these tours because they're grateful. I would be. Absolutely.
Oh, gosh, can I tell you the story of the first night I took a tour with Eddie and what the lady on the tour said? I just showed up. He said, show up any night. And there happened to be a family of psychics on this tour. And they each had different skills. One hears things, one sees things. They don't charge, but they were open about it. But then there was a lady in the back, and she was sort of a super psychic in a sense, and she wasn't talking a lot. And we finally got her to talk. And she said that there were, and keep in mind, Eddie is wearing his Ghostbuster costume. We like to, you know, dress for the occasion. And she said, there are five children following you up the Strand. They love that you come here every week to tell their stories. Eddie's crying. I'm in tears. Half the family's in tears. He had just told me that morning, that his wife had told him to stop bringing little kid ghosts home because they had had some incidents in their residence.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember one time, this was a while back, I was doing a tour and I went home and we live on a boat, and one room I have some musical instruments. And my wife at the time was crocheting a blanket. So she had a thing of yarn and her blanket right there on the shelf in the music room. And I woke up to find that the yarn was strewn across the room through the mini blinds, back across the room underneath my 200-pound amplifier, and then back across the room on top of my guitar. I asked her, I said, what do you think? What do you think about this? And she goes, why did you do that? I said, I didn't do that. But I think somebody may have followed me up. Like, she was like, oh, I'm very proud of you. Good for you. You made a mess.
Real funny, Eddie. But I get where she's coming from, because that would be what I would jump to as well. Obviously, you did it, but I don't know why, because it's really not funny. You're stretching out my yarn.
Right?
Well, she told me, you know, whatever happens in Galveston, leave it in Galveston. I said, okay.
Do my best.
Yeah. Get off while we're here.
But you would almost have to every night have a way at the end of the tour to be like, okay, y'all stay put. I'll be back.
It has become just a habit because I've had my own issues, flickering lights, things I've had to deal with at home. And you don't want to deal with that a whole lot. So, yeah, I try to leave it at the causeway.
What's really wonderful is, like I said, they're just people. And 95% of the people we talk about are just good people, benevolent spirits who enjoy us telling their stories. And so, yeah, at night after we're done, I'm just like, okay, kids, I'll be back tomorrow or whatever. If you really have to talk to me, go ahead, follow me. We'll keep it a secret or something. But we can figure this out.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the ghosts of Galveston with January Wilson and Eddie Spector. For more information on their tours, go to eddiespector.com. You can find the link in the show notes. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.